Good afternoon, and welcome to the ICE UN Required Reports session. I would like to first introduce our panelists. First, it will be Novella Quesada. Novella has been an RN for 44 years. Novella graduated from the LA County School of Nursing. In 2002, Novella earned her BSN from the University of Phoenix after 26 years in nursing, marrying, and raising two children. Novella has been a leader in the managed care arena for 20 years in the UM and QM departments for both health plans and PMGs. Novella has been a member of the ICE since 2000, and Novella has been a co-lead on the Service Determination Standardization Team for Medi-Cal and currently a co-lead on the UN Required Reports Team. And welcome, Novella.
Thank you, Melanie.
Our next panelist is Paula Gunther. Paula is a clinical compliance manager for Anthem. Paula's experience includes over 28 years of experience working in healthcare, with 16 years in Medicare and Medicaid managed care. Paula's compliance concentration includes UM, claims, and delegation oversight. Paula is currently the lead for the ODAG and SARAG delegate CMS compliance and noted by CMS as having the best practice. So welcome, Paula, and I will hand
Thank
it
you.
Off to you. Novella, thank you
very much. You know, I have to say I've been coming here for many, many years, and I've only run into a few people that I know, so there's a lot of new faces, which I think is wonderful. It just shows the confidence you're giving us here at ICE. Hopefully this will be my second to the last year, because I hope to retire next year. That's my goal. Everybody says, no, you're not.
No, you're not.
Yes, yes. Anyways, just to let you, so you can have some confidence in me and what I'm telling you today or what I'm going to present to you today, I oversee the UM department, the case management department, credentialing, risk adjustment, performance improvement, and some compliance. So I have my hands in everything right now as far as managed care. I've been doing this for a long time, and I love what I do. I really do. It's just I'm tired. There's a lot of work. Just telling you how much I do. Anyway, so why do we report the UM work plan? Because it's what everybody wants. DHCS wants to see numbers, DMHC, and CMS. So the health plans on those regulators, on their behalf, they're collecting that information so they can send it to the regulators. The health plans need to have oversight of our activities, such as bed days, our denials, complex case management, SNP, CalMedi Connect. And then we collect this, all the data that we're putting onto the UM work plan report is from claims, from your authorization system, from your case management system, or if you have a data warehouse. So the UM work plan is built up. It's a long sheet. It looks like a long sheet. I've tried printing it, and it doesn't print well. But it's a long sheet with 21 tabs now. Yes, 21 tabs. And we start off with instructions, with definitions, and then a signature page. So the work plan starts on the, hold on, what happened here? The work plan starts with the inpatient. So the inpatient wants all your length of stays, your bed activity, your admits per thousand, your bed days per thousand, your SNFs, your LTAC, any behavioral health admissions, et cetera. Then there are your denials. They want to talk about ER visits, and I'll talk to you a little bit more about that. And then your referral turnaround time. As you know, if you've been audited by the health plans, that is very, very important, especially with our senior population, with all our lines of business. So on the top of the form, let's see, you're going to enter, and we'll show you further when we give you examples. You're going to enter your On the top, it'll say the name of your organization. You enter the name of your organization, and you're also going to enter that this is your first semiannual, second semiannual, your quarterly, first quarter, second quarter, etc. And that'll run across for the rest of your report. You don't have to keep repeating it. And a few years ago, we were having to fill that top part, and we no longer have to do that. So then you also have attestation questions, which is your signature page. It's going to ask you about how your ER information is being gathered or reported. Is it by claims? Is it by your system, your managed care system? Are they medical necessity denials you're reporting, or are they just administrative denials? For example, because the member is not your member, because the member doesn't have benefits, the member is no longer have your plan, et cetera. So then we have four sections in the signature page, which is going to ask about whether this is the initial work plan or not. And the initial work plan is always due on the 15th of each month, of each year. So what that's doing is you're going to let them know what your plan is for the rest of the year, how you're going to be looking at everything, what your goals are going to be, expectations, et cetera. You can report two ways, either semi-annually or quarterly. And then you'll report on the 15th as well, your annual for that past year, your annual evaluation. And that in itself will meet the standards for your program, your UM program evaluation, that section of that whole 21 tabs that you're going to have. You'll be finalizing your year end in each section. So you're going to add your year-to-date stats on there, which are going to show your stats for your inpatient information, your bed days, your number of admits, your average length of stay, your SNF information, your LTAC, et cetera. You're going to show them what you did last year. And then you're going to add your goals for 2000, which is usually what you're taking off of MCG. If you're using the MCG bed day goals, you'll add those in there, or unless the health plans have specific goals that they want you to meet as far as for your bed days, your admits per 1,000, and your average length of stay. You could also hide your rows. So if you're only going to report semi-annually, you don't have to show that first quarter. You can hide those columns. You can hide rows. If you're only reporting for commercial, you can hide all those rows, which is commercial, senior, Medi-Cal, CalMediConnect. Hide all those if you want, if whatever helps you work better, easier, more efficiently. I apologize. This is so small. I don't know how it looks on here. It doesn't look too bad. So this is just showing you what you're going to report. So you're going to notice on that where it says commercial and going across, it has two check boxes. One is to let you know, let us know, the plans know that you don't report commercial. So check that off, unless you do, which the majority of us do report commercial. And the next section is Medicare. Do you report Medicare? Yes or no. Do you report Medi-Cal? Yes or no. Do you report CalMediConnect? Make sure you check those if you don't need to report on those. Something we did add in here that folks were asking for is to check if there were no inpatient data to report. The only way that's going to happen if you only have a few members or if you're new and you just started up and you have nothing to report yet. That'll be about the only instance, because if you've had this information or these members for a year, you're going to have admissions. Also on your the next tab, too, it's going to have your inpatient work plan reports. Also in here, you're going to check whether or not you're going to report quarterly or if you're reporting semi-annually. Again, there, too, you can hide the quarterly if you're not going to report quarterly or hide the semi-annual reporting. It's just much easier. Now, behind that is going to be the over-under utilization. That is optional. We added that so that we didn't have one tab to be going back and forth to be trying to report your over-under utilization. And it wasn't really significant information that was being asked for. So we added at the end of a few of the tabs, just so that if you find you had over-utilization, say you found one member was bringing up your numbers up, report that so they can see that you had over-utilization because of a member's multiple admissions or whatever. Just use that as optional. Okay, because some plans, especially Medi-Cal, want to see your over-under utilization. So this would be a great place to report that. Let's see. So when you're completing your goals and your analysis, you're going to put in there what your initial work plan goals are, what your activities are in order to meet those goals, and when you plan to complete those. Sometimes it's going to be ongoing because inpatients are an up and down kind of thing, depending on your line of business. I mean, we had which I'm sure everybody did, last year when we had a really high flu volume? It was awful. It just messed up our bed days big time. And then who's going to be responsible who's the responsible person reporting? Okay? And the title. So this is how it looks. how you're going to report all your goals, what happened, what did you find as a result of those goals? Were you able to meet your goals? And what do you have to do in order to improve or to meet your goals or to get closer to your goals? You're going to put that in that second column. And then you're always going to put a date. What I do is I put the next reporting date, which is going to be, say, for instance, this is your report the first semi-annual, which is in August. And then in February, you're going to report again. Unless you want to specify in here, we're going to look at it again in 3 months. But a lot of times with your inpatients, you can't really see significance until 4 or 5 months after because of the lag. You want to make sure all your data is being collected and your claims are in, et cetera. I'm sorry. I think I speak loud enough. Thank you. All right. Okay. So then this is the over-under utilization section. It's underneath the your goals and such. So, again, it's optional. You want to be able to capture whether or not you showed that you were able to identify any over or underutilization. Overutilization would be, say, for instance, if you had multiple one-day admissions or if you had a high overutilizations of observation. Some hospitals, mine in particular, does not like observation, which then increases my one-day admissions. So we're trying to work with them right now to say, okay, we won't abuse this. There was one plan at our hospital that totally abused it, and so what they did is their bed days didn't look that bad, but their readmission rate started to go up because they kept putting, you know, a possible STEMI in observations. Like, are you kidding me? So they were trying to convince them that we're not going to abuse it. We know specific diagnoses, your chest pains, your abdominal pains, your shortness of breath. Yeah, you're going to have a senior that, okay, I'm going to admit them for a day. But if you can evaluate them in the first 24 hours and they're negative, send them home. If not, then admit them. But why do you want to mess up your observation, your inpatient days by continuously admitting somebody just for one day? Okay? I don't know if anybody else has that problem. I work for a hospital foundation, and so my IPA, my MSO and the hospital were all part of the same organization. So I have a lot of involvement with the hospital and how my patients are coming in and out and managed. So the next tab 3 is your referral metrics. So this is where you're going to report all your number of routine requests for our pre-service, your urgent requests, your urgent concurrent requests, and then your PTMPY of your routine urgent and your urgent concurrent. And then at the bottom, you'll see where it says denied. Oh, you added that. Did you add that?
No, I didn't actually. I think the version you had.
Oh, okay. So the denied, you're going to want to indicate how many denials you had from the total number of referrals, and then you calculate your percentage. I'm old school, so I still have my denial rate at 2.5%. I know a lot of organizations now do it at 5%, which personally I think is still too many denials. But mine is 2.5%. There is nothing that tells us we have to have it at a certain percentage or meet a certain percentage, but 2.5% makes us very accountable for what we're approving, not approving, et cetera. That's up to your organization as to how you want to. I'm a little anal, so it's 2.5. All right, so you're going to repeat this for every line of business you had. There's going to be, again, check here. Check up there on the top in that blue line across from commercial. And if you don't have commercial, if you don't have Medi-Cal, Medicare, or CalMediConnect, okay? And then the ER utilization, what we did here is we wanted to stress the only thing you need to report here are medical necessity denials, ER denials, which none of us should be denying, right? So if you are not going to report medical necessity denials because you have none, then you don't have to report anything here. I always report the administrative ones because when I run a report, they come up. But I'm able to explain these are because the member's benefits ran out, the member's no longer mine, their term, whatever. You know. So those are all administrative. It's a due, et cetera. So what I do is I just write a little note in my work plan in tab 6. Okay. So make sure you realize this is only for medical necessity. If you don't have any medical necessities, don't report it. I just wanted to point this out. Again, for tab 6, only medical necessity. That's all you're going to do. You can put in there if you want, if it makes you feel better, that you do not report medical necessity denials because you don't deny any. Usually when you have an audit, you have to write an attestation, a note to the surveyor that you do not deny ER claims, correct? So this just validates that. Please stop me if you have questions. I don't mind. I can go back and start over. Complex case management metrics. This is a very long page. There's a lot of information you have to report here. A lot of us aren't delegated for complex case management, but if you're full risk, I have UHC seniors, I'm full risk for them, so I'm delegated complex, so we have to report on this. So you're going to have to report how many patients you tried to join the complex case management program, how many said, no, I don't want to do it, how many you tried to reach out to again, how many you went ahead and completed the assessment and the care plan, et cetera. So it's a very detailed report. So if you're not delegated for this, you don't have to complete it, and then just check it off right here on the top there. I'm saying right here like you know what I'm talking about. I'm pointing at it. It's very detailed. This is more of that. It's asking for the total number of cases you enrolled and managed, total number of cases that are open for at least 60 days, because that's what the health plans are going to want to look at to audit, are those that have been open for at least 60 days or more. Okay? And then how many you closed during your reporting period, and then how many cases were open and closed during enrollment, for enrollment, because they were no longer enrolled. Okay? And yes.
Hi, I'm Tammy Morrow from Blue Shields. Back on the ER, let me understand, did you say if they're not denying, if they have none for medical necessity, they can leave it blank?
Do you have a plan?
I have an old school, not charted, not done. So do we have a box where if they had none that we checked there were no medical necessity, or they put in a comment section that there were no MedNest denials for that period?
Right.
Because I'm thinking I'm going to look at that as a blank and down
correct.
Score.
So look at tab 6. Remember I said tab 6, go ahead and document it in tab 6, which indicates you can write in there that you do not deny medical necessity claims. No problem. No, that's no problem. It's okay. I'm going forward. I'm so sorry. Complex case management just mystifies me. Okay, then we have, let's see, number of complex case management cases that were over 75K. So you want to look at, we do high risk, and I'm always going to relate to what I do because that's all I can compare, is we always look at all our high costs, really high costs more so than high risk, but they end up being high risk because they're so costly. So we look at that every month. We see who's getting up there in the cost because they have frequent ER visits, frequent hospitalizations. They could be getting chemo and they're going to be high risk. And those, I said, don't even bother me with those because I cannot do anything about those. We look at those, we review them, they're fine, they're meeting criteria. It's those other ones that are very sick. Even your ESRDs and dialysis, nothing you can do about it. Just make sure they're getting the care they can. DaVita's not going to overbill you like they usually do for stuff they shouldn't. But anyways, we'll go forward with that. So that kind of stuff you have to put aside and say, well, those aren't the ones. We want to look at your high utilizers, okay? Okay, and then you have the percentage of population, percentage of members that enrolled during that period of time, and then what your population assessment revealed, and what your member experiences. So you always have to do a survey at least once a year, if not twice a year. So I recommend my staff do it twice a year because the memberships changes and the number of enrollees are going to be different from the past 6 months. So we go ahead and do it twice a year. But you call your members, ask them how they think you've been doing. You know, you have a survey, complete it, and then you document it here. And then you're going to enter how effective you were with the measures that you identified, which you identify in your initial evaluation, what you're going to look for the upcoming year. And then this is just giving you a definition of all the case management, complex case management terms that you have to look for or look at. And then this is your report and work plan reports. So it's going to ask you how your population assessment looked, what was reported on your member experience survey, And how effective was your program? So you're going to analyze it here. You're going to show your planned activities, your target dates to meet your goals, and again, who's responsible for that. I always put myself and my manager for case management, since we work collaboratively on this, I guide them on this, so I always make sure everybody gets the credit too, because I'm not going to do all the work. And this is a continuation of that. Okay. And then you have your SNPs. I don't know how many folks have SNPs in here. HealthNet has SNPs, LA Care has SNPs, UHC, Scan, Brand New Day, Alignment. I have all of those. So luckily, I'm not delegated SNPs for but a couple. I think LA Care, I have them. So same kind of information, same type of information they're asking for. Okay. This is a continuation of that. Here they ask for number of admissions, number that go to SNF or LTC, number that are in your rehab facility, how many ambulatory care and surgery center transitions you had. So they ask a few different questions. The SNPs, they're very particular. They want a lot of information on them. Like LA Care is auditing me like almost every week because I'm new to LA Care. It's been very exciting. The gray hair, just gonna, every year they get worse. So then we talk about transition of care from settings. So basically transition of care is somebody is admitted and then they transition to a lower setting, maybe to a SNF, or even if they're going to go home. Are you contacting that member? Are you making sure they have all their appointments? Are you making sure they have all their home health services? All their DME arrived, they went home with it, et cetera. So you're going to want to look at all of that with your transitions of care. And then also with care coordination, the two go hand in hand. So we call all of our UHC seniors to make sure, because we have a post-acute clinic, so we call them, our pharmacist calls to do the med rec. So since I have all these departments under me, my risk adjustment and my STARS and HEDIS, I'm collecting data at the same time as I'm doing this post-acute discharge because I'm doing my med reconciliation. I'm going to make sure the patient's going to go to the post-acute clinic, and we're collecting all this data on them. So there's a lot going on. I have a pharmacist call these patients, and then we do a little mini assessment before they go make their clinic appointment. So we want to make sure they hear us, they see us, they feel us, want to know that we care about them, and make sure that they get the care that they need. And the whole idea, what is it? To prevent them from going back into the hospital. Alrighty, so then again, for SNP, you're going to report your key findings, your analysis of your interventions, et cetera. And then CMC, that's another challenging group of members. CMC, you have to do an assessment. They have to have a care plan. The PCP has to get that care plan, even if it's just a small little care plan. And you have to have an interdisciplinary team meeting to approve your care plan. Same with Compass Case Management, which I didn't mention, but with CMC, I have to mention it because it's quite intense care for them. So there's a lot involved with them as well, so you have to make sure you're reporting on the number of members, how many you identified, how many were enrolled, how many refused, how many assessments you were able to complete, how many ICPs you were able to do, ICTs, et cetera. And then they go into the bed days, member participation in the ICT. We have a lot of problems getting our members to participate. We have a lot of problems getting our PCP to participate, even though we do it like at 12:30, so they could finish their day, their morning session, and get on the call. So we're usually just sending them a letter and the care plan so they know what we did. And then also your quality metrics. You're going to want to identify if you met your goals, if they got flu vaccines, what the fall risk was, if that was all documented, any kind of fall prevention that was added in the ICP. And then if they're receiving any behavioral health services. I know with Medi-Cal it's very difficult because you have to go through the county, and I have to work with LA County, which is very large, and it's very difficult to get them to. I've worked for and with the county for so long, I know how to maneuver through them, but I know if you don't know how, it's difficult. And then also you're going to go ahead and document, again, the number of admissions, the SNF LTC admissions, how many members... CMC members went through the ER, how many ER visits, I said that, and how many outpatient and ambulatory care transitions there were. So very detailed, as you can see. And then it goes into time frames again. Everything's a time frame. So here you're showing your you're going to identify your initial work plan goals, your plan activities, and your dates. So this is just tab 12. We're halfway through. Again, more information that you're going to report on. I have to do 15 of these, okay? It's very time consuming. Okay, so then tab 13, this is the easy stuff. This is where you're going to indicate all your UM turnaround metrics. Again, your goals are going to be 100%. You always want your turnaround times to be 100%, right? Okay. And then again, if you had a delay in your goals, if you went past 1 or 2 days or whatever, you need to explain yourself. I had no nurses for like 3 months. It was awful. I can't find nurses for UM. It's been very, very challenging. So the manager and I were doing it. So I had explained to them why, you know, we were usually at 2 or 3 days with our turnaround times for commercial and Medi-Cal. So we had to go up to the fifth day, which drove me nuts, but we did it. But they said, oh, what happened? I said, well, I had no nurses. But now I'm fully staffed. If you're delegated for behavioral health, you have to document it. Usually it's for your senior population where you are delegated for behavioral health. So you're going to have to make sure you document all the information they want as far as UM, making decisions, turnaround times, et cetera. And then pharmacy metrics. Don't hold it against me, please.
No. my lovely director here and I are currently doing reviews for one of our groups.
Yeah.
So some of these things are going to be out of tact.
Mm-hmm.
How do we explain that on the ICE report?
You have to be very, very open and honest. Transparent is that new word,
will do that.
Right? And you know what? I had to do it for a couple of my plans, and they were saying, we understand. Auditing is not, is not a slap on the hand anymore. It's, I'm sorry about that. We understand. We know everybody's having problems. I'm going to ding you for it. Just correct it. And I'm going to re-audit you in a couple of months.
I'm going to write you a little note so you can come to one of my groups and tell them that.
I have proof of it. Trust me. You have to be very transparent with the plans. As soon as they come in or before you send them the files, because we do everything electronically, just say, hey, I was without nurses for a couple of months, so my turnaround time was a little off. I can't do anything about that when there's just two people doing over 1,000 UM reviews. I don't know if there's any plans in here that can support me on that, but thank you.
Yeah, we would issue a cap.
Yeah.
Giving us a heads up is appreciated.
Of course. And it's not punitive. They don't want to take over your UM. Trust me. They do not want to de-delegate. Trust me. They don't want to do that. So as long as you're transparent and you're showing the effort that you're going to correct it, especially if you have a reputation for always have good turnaround times and you had this one thing, trust me, it killed me, but it is what it is.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay, so you're going to have pharmacy turnaround times. I think we just got Medicare now is 24 hours for urgent and 72 hours for routine. So don't forget that, okay? It just came out. So now it's commercial and Medicare. Medi-Cal has the same thing, but some people don't realize that. If you read the regs, Medi-Cal is the same thing, 24/72. If you just do it across the line, just do it for everybody. Make everybody the same way, then you don't make any mistakes in your turnaround time. Self-injectables, let me see. Standing referrals is 72 hours. I have a Vivity a Blue Cross product called Vivity. That we have to do those referrals in 3 days. So if you do, that's what I do with my turnaround times for my UM. Everybody's 5 days, period. Even though Medicare is 14, I don't want to go that long. Is that fair to the patients? So I make everything standard at 5 days. I want everybody at 3 days. Get those out. No more than 3 days. All righty then. Here's again the metrics for pharmacy. Same thing. Don't forget that checkbox if you're not doing that line of business. Majority of times, self-injectables are the groups. They're delegated for self-injectables. And I have specialty pharmacies that don't believe us. It's like, dude, I'm willing to pay for this. Just, authorize it and send me the bill. So make sure you check everything, how you're doing your reporting, whether it's quarterly or semi-annually. And then we have our wonderful IRRs. So this IRR is going to cover both clinical, which are your doctors, your physician reviewers, and your nurses who are also reviewing, and your non-clinical. Because your non-clinical, I have auto-offs, so we allow our non-clinical to auto-off, plain radiology, you know, certain things, that kind of stuff. They check the benefit, it's good to go. So we have a list of those, show those to the health plan because they always want to see that. I also have nurse auto auths for those common things that everybody across the line has the same criteria. We did it for CINVISC, but now Blue Cross and Blue Shield cover CINVISC. So it's like, make up your mind, please. But yeah, so if there's common criteria, then go ahead. The nurse can go ahead and auto approve it without having to provide the criteria, the reference, et cetera, and then it makes it quicker to get those done. But we're still staying in compliance. And then this is the new one, miscellaneous reporting. Paula and I have a very large group that is part of our group, our team. We meet in July, and we usually end by November. And so this year, somebody, is that person here today that suggested this? Do you want to admit to suggesting this?
No.
It wasn't me.
No, I know.
No, we went back and forth on this, whether or not to report this or not, because we no longer have the QM work plan, because there were no plans that said we need those from everybody. I'm finding out one plan wants it, and I'm really pushing back on it because I don't think, if you're not going to delegate quality to me, I'm not going to do the work plan. That's all there is to it. I fought UHC for 2 years and finally got them because what we did is we gave them the work plan. You're the only one that does this. You update the work plan. And they took it back and decided, oh, I guess we don't want to do this. So they don't do it anymore. So what was suggested on this one, again, it's miscellaneous, it's optional, there's instructions for it, but it's to report your accessibility of services, which is a big thing as we're seeing today. They're talking about it a lot today, accessibility. The plans are really starting to get on us about that, especially with the new roster, because the roster will dictate accessibility, because they'll see whether or not a doctor has the same office hours, office, you know, the same days that they're open. They'll show up and the doors close and it's Monday and they say right there, we're open. So they're gonna look at that. So this one was just basically to report whether or not you had issues with accessibility. Is what you want to do. Did you find offices that weren't complying with the accessibility? Did you find offices that weren't reporting? I don't know about you guys, but my offices never tell me that the doctor's going on vacation, he has a locum, or we referred all our patients to the urgent care because the doctor's not going to be in for a month or a week or whatever. They always forget to tell us this. So if a doctor's going to change their hours because the doctor's ill or he's going on sabbatical, or if he's going to change the number of days he's going to be able, they have to tell you. And that's an access issue. If you have members that can't get an appointment for a neurologist for 3 months, that's an access issue. So you need to report all that. And then you need to report, what did you do about that? How did you resolve that so members aren't waiting 3 months for a neurology appointment? Or we have problems with rheumatology, with neurosurgery. I think those are the three, pulmonology once in a while. But that's the kind of stuff you need to report in here if you feel you need to, because some of the, I can't remember who it was that asked for this. She says she gets asked by the plans all the time about that kind of information. And, of course, it's only one or two plans. It's not the other 13 of them. But still, she wanted it. We voted on it. So that's how this group works. And so we have this in there. Remember, it's optional, you guys. We're not telling you have to do it. If your plan's not asking for it, because for my group, network management has always managed network adequacy and access and everything because they're the ones that manage the rosters, the doctors and such. But she wanted it in here since we don't have the QM work plan anymore. Oh, you know what we didn't do? What I missed was your annual member experience, your provider member UM satisfaction surveys. Make sure you do those once a year because they're going to ask for them. What I do is I have all my staff stop one day and just start making calls to all the members in the last 6 months that received an author denial and find out what they thought about their experience. Next year we're going to mail them because we didn't get much luck with the phone calls this year. And then for the providers, I have group doctors and IPA affiliate doctors. So I send them to all the group doctors and I had my network management send all the questionnaires out to the affiliated doctors. Whether they fill it out or not, it's like, it's not a big deal. Just have your MA stand there and ask you the questions. But you have to have it, no matter how many results you get back. You have to show how many you send out and how many results you get back, and then the outcome of those. And then how you're going to resolve them if there's any negative results. Okay? All right. I am going to change this over. So we can have Paula go next.
And just so everybody knows, too, we meet starting in July, and we've been the last couple of years, I think, meeting twice a month, because we're always trying to complete the review of the work plan, make adjustments, such as NCQA updates. We update that as well. But we really encourage everybody to join and participate. We've really had great participation in the last few years.
Yeah, we have over 20 people participate, and that's tough when you're on the phone.
Yeah, for that. We're always looking for efficiencies, ways to automate, ways to make it easier for everybody, because, you know, again, at the landscape that we now all work in, we're having to do more with less. So, you know, encourage you guys to come join and be part of the fun. So this will be fun. All right. I wanted to kind of just poll the room and see if there are any new people who have never completed any Part C reporting, or if Part C reporting is new to you. Okay, good.
It's okay if you haven't raised.
Because I know last year there were some new people, and I just needed to know what level to go to, and I just also wanted to offer. That you don't want to raise your hand, I'm available afterwards if you want to ask specific questions if I go too high level.
Because it's daunting.
Thanks. Okay. So the 2019 CMS Part C reporting that I'm going to review today is specific to UM. Claims is also applicable to Part C reporting, but this is more geared towards UM. Want to also let you know that, let me grab this real quick. This is the Part C technical specifications. You can Google it. You can go to CMS. The org determinations all start on, the piece that I'll be reviewing start on page 9. So that's the technical specifications. And in 2019, there were a lot of changes to the technical specifications. And I know that in the past, the UM main team historically made the updates to the reporting template, the Part C reporting template that ICE uses. I got involved late in March. It was a fire drill, I guess I'll say. You know, again, we came together. We worked as fast as we could to come to some form of agreement. I think we'll meet again in January just to kind of clean things up and make sure that there aren't any additional changes for 2020. But again, we conducted an ad hoc work group that was, again, a fire drill, lack of a better word. So what I have up on the screen right now is just it's the actual CMS org determination definition. Everybody should be, I'm not going to read it verbatim. Again, everybody should be very aware of it. But it is, any decision made by a Medicare health plan. And as a delegate or a PMG or an IPA, MSO, you're an extension of the health plan. So all of these regulatory guidelines apply to you, as you should know. A reopening is a remedial action. And is based on new evidence that can be provided. And we'll later on in the presentation, we'll get into more discussion or more detailed discussion regarding reopenings, because there's been additional information and or there could be, like to maybe have some conversations or see where everybody's at as far as how you're reviewing a reopening and that the new information. Because I know, again, this last year was a conversation piece. So the definition, and this particular slide I'm going to spend a little bit of time on, because there's a little bit of contradicting information and need to be, there was a little confusion this year about how to pull data. So CMS states that a completed organization determination and reconsiderations, for example, plan has notified enrollee of its pre-service decision or adjudicated a claim during the reporting period, regardless of when the request was received. So CMS has decided that this year, 2019, that the report should be pulled based on notification date to the member. And in years past, and how we pull our ODAG reports, it's all based on decision.
And again, so then when you go to the next bullet, this is where it gets a little contradictory. But I know that our health plan has reached out. I think United Healthcare and probably other plans have reached out to Medicare to confirm and get clarification on how the data should be pulled. But CMS says that plans are to report an organization determination or reconsideration where a substantive decision has been made as described in the section and processed in accordance with the organization determination and reconsideration procedures described under the 42 CFR Part 42, 422. So again, in that next bullet, it's saying, it's talking about the substantive decision. And again, in the years past, we pulled based on this decision, but this year we are pulling the data based on notification. So I'm going to pause for a minute because I know that there was a lot of back and forth with that, and just see if anybody has any concerns or anything that they would like to add. So what has changed for 2019? Again, it's based on the member notification date. The element numbering is now alpha, and they also changed a little bit of the order because they added additional elements. And those additional category elements would be the enrollee provider organization determinations and the non-contracted provider organization determinations. Sorry. So, and as part of the Part C reporting, we pull data, we pull source data. You know, again, there was a time where only you would submit to the health plans just your summary counts, but now as you get into validation audits that are conducted every year by usually an independent validator for CMS, you need to have that source data to back up what your summary numbers are reporting. Because CMS during that, or the independent validator on behalf of CMS could ask at any given time that they want to see the source data that supports those summary counts. And so, you know, again, you don't want to get into a situation where you find out that they don't match. So the source data elements are pretty straightforward. I think everybody's pretty much familiar with them. Again, you know, it's basically contract ID, Medicare beneficiary ID, which is the MBI, plan ID. I have on this slide where it just shows what the outputs are on the source data tab of the for the ICE template. And, you know, again, the E and the ER are different. Last year, I believe it was B for beneficiary. They changed it to E for enrollee, and then it was BR for beneficiary representative, and this year now it's enrollee representative. Again, this didn't change too much, or it didn't change. You know, good standard with extension, expedited. The E's for expedited with extensions. And again, these are just codes that are populated in the report itself to help identify what the outcome was of the org determination. Again, just the typical, you know, received date, decision, time decision, date of verbal notification. Again, it has standard outputs. This is just a view of a snapshot of where I pulled all the subsections from the new protocols that shows, again, it's now A, B, C, D, and F. It used to be, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. Again, and then the disposition of all the org determinations you'll see down here. And they did remove, I believe, the overall turnaround time, but I think some plans have kept that as part of their template. Again, this is just another, this is, now we're getting into the reopening data. Again, nothing really changed with this section with the exception of the alpha, the element, the elephant numbers, the elephant numbers, the element numbers, from numeric to alpha. And this is just a snapshot of the actual summary count of the report. Again, and what we did do this year is we did include some autofill where it's going to auto populate the counts based on what you do have in your source data. So hopefully that will be helpful, and there won't be that many variances, because I know as we're validating data, a lot of times there are variances between the source data and the actual the summary counts, and then you have to reject it back to the delegate or the PMG and, you know, have them relook at it. So hopefully this will eliminate some of that back and forth for everybody. And again, the source data changes were the updated the HIC to the MBI. There's no longer the separation between the EOD or the SOD received decision notification dates and times. It's all just on one report. Again, I mentioned earlier who made the request is now an enrollee representative. Here are the reporting inclusions, fully favorable services related to the org determination, partially favorable, all adverse, organization determinations. I do want to mention, too, as far as the detailed data, is that dismissals should not be included in the overall organization determination counts. Those should not be included in, like, the summary counts. Exclusions would be, you don't want to include any MMP data, any IRE. IRE or ALJs, be sure that your source data doesn't have semicolons or greater than or less than signs, and that there are no zeros included. Additionally, make sure that you're not including any concurrent hospital reviews, SNFs, home health, comprehensive rehab, QIOs. So now reopenings. We only have a few minutes, so hopefully we can get through this quickly. But the reopenings have become a little more tricky, especially with the outreach to the providers. When CMS had said we had to do the best practice was three outreaches. Now, it says, at a minimal of one. However, with reopenings, you need to have a clear process must be in place. And there needs to be a clear process between the health plan and the delegate provider group to understand if a health plan is requesting if a health plan receives an appeal, the provider group, the delegate, vendor, they need to be documenting that on their side, the way you would know is when they call and they request for additional information or the medical records so that they can make the decision on the appeal. And so with the reopening, the reason that process is very important is because in the event, what we see a lot of times is that a peer-to-peer will happen. Once that denial letter goes out, all of a sudden the doctor's like, oh, yeah, you outreached three times. And, I never called you back. I never gave you the information. I never sent you the information. So they call back within, a day of receiving the letter. So now they're calling back and they're giving the medical director additional information, and that's additional information that they didn't have when they originally received the request. So that could be considered a reopening because, again, it's new information. In the regs it says, it may be initiated by the plan, because I know that people get I think the conversation gets stuck in, it has to be in writing, it has to be by the member. But again, in the regs, it does say that it can be initiated by the plan. Going back to the appeals piece of it is because in the event, as long as you have a solid process and you document that there's an appeal on file, if that provider or you received additional information, if that happens and you see that there's an appeal on file, you can't go any further because it's clear that you cannot do a reopening if there's an appeal on file. However, if, However, if, you know, typically when the provider receives that denial letter, they're calling back in with that additional information, and that, you know, the appeal hasn't started. So, you know, as long as you have clear documentation of your appeal process, you should be able to reopen that. And that's in the best interest of the member. So in the event, so you get the additional information, you reopen it, you exclude it from your ODAG data, and you would then report it separately in Part C. Yes, Yvonne.
I'm not going to say the name of the plan, but I was just contacted by one of our contracted health plans that stated it does not matter whether it's an appeal or not, that we are not delegated for reopenings if we have given a final determination as it, no, it wasn't Humana. If we have given a final determination of a denial and a provider comes back with additional information, we may not change that. We must consider that an appeal and refer to the plan.
Humana. We've been
okay, it was scam.
We had this discussion last year again, but again, I think this is where, you know, we've reached out, like, I'll speak for my own, the health plan that I work for, but again, this is, the interpretation is because there is additional information that you did not have at the time of that original determination, they feel that they can reopen it. And again, I'm going to go with this is health plan specific at this time. And I think that tomorrow when we have CMS here, you know, I'll reach out and get additional information on that.
Yes, Paula.
And then we'll go forward because I, you know, again, you know, this is I'm representing what I know and as I know it. So I appreciate your feedback, and we will get back with you on that.
I have a question. What if? What if the physician resubmits a new auth request for the same request but with more information, but they've submitted a new auth request? Can we approve it with that other information, even though there was a denial and it's hopefully it's in, you know, if it's in the process, we won't hear an appeal.
So, and I, what I've seen in that situation is there should be a process to see. Like, it's basically a duplicate request, and again, it would go down that reopening path potentially. But so I guess we'll, you know, again, that's why I want to bring that up, and we will reach back out because, again, I know that we all talked about this last year, but again, there was additional guidance that was provided in the CMS regulations. Again, so and it should be specific reason for requesting the reopening. This is where we get into that written piece of it, of the reopening. It must be made within time frames. You know, again, a reopening is separate and distinct from appeals. Again, you need to have a process in place. And again, an example of reopening guidelines and examples, you know, when a determination or decision is reopened and revised, including a revision of the rationale or decision that is not revised, the plan, IRE, ALJ, or the attorney, adjudicator, or counsel that reopened the decision must deliver a written notification. So you must, regardless, deliver a notification to the provider. And then the last couple slides are just the references. So I know on the ICE website, they're PDFs. So if you guys need me to forward you any links, I've got a pad up here. You can just put your name and email, and I'd be happy to forward the PDF so that you have functioning links.
You could also get the PDF off of your app, your ICE app.
Oh, but you can't get to the links through the PDF.
Oh, okay.
You know, like the hyperlinks.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay.
So I know we're at time, or we got a minute.
Just quick, when you speak to Medicare, mm-hmm. Are you going to send that out to everybody?
Yeah, well, I'll have to get with ICE and see how to communicate that back out. And or I think uh, and if I can get with Medicare, we can have them maybe speak about it tomorrow. I don't know if everybody's going to be here tomorrow. But if you want to give me, or I can get your name, or we'll figure out, we'll find a way to do a blast. I don't think that everybody in this room is part of the UM required reports team. So I think I have some people's information, but I might not have everybody's. So
so join ICE if you're not part of this team, if you want to get that information.
There you go. Good segue. Yes.
Ooh. Hi. Real quick question going back to Novella's presentation. Andrea from IEHP. NCQA eliminated the QI-4 element G assessing experience with the UM process. Is that also a regulatory requirement?
Oh, yeah. Yes. You mean the member experience?
Right. Well, we did one specific for UM separate from CAPS.
Right, right. Yes, it is. They ask, all the plans ask for it still. Even though, if you're saying NCQA
right.
Doesn't have it anymore, the plans still want to see it.
They moved it out of QI, but they put it under.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they took it out of QI, she says, and they put it in UM. It's okay. Always been in UM. It's been in
and
UM
we can
for a
use
while.
The, yeah. The regular CAPS then for that.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the 2020 NCQA changes yet. So as soon as we see them, and if there's any changes,
that's where it's at.
Okay, then we'll make the change
okay.
For sure. I would be very happy to remove
that.
Yeah,
we eliminated it.
The last good for you.
The calendar year we did was 2018.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't gotten my NCQA standards yet for 2020. So as soon as I do, I'll definitely look at that because we didn't have access to it this year, so we couldn't look at them to compare.
And if you guys have additional questions, I know that we have to flip the room for our next presentation, or I guess my next presentation with Dorothy. So please feel free to, if you want to come up and give me your card and I can call, or we can meet, back outside while we're mingling. Or during the happy hour.
Thank you, everybody. We appreciate
your
time.
Appreciate your,